Radio Reverb Brighton Festival 2017 now. All of the news, reviews, and what not to miss at Brighton Festival 2017 with Melita Dennett on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, the only station on air with a dedicated Brighton Festival hour.
You listen to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM on DAB and online at radioreverb.com. I'm Melita Dennett. This is Radio Reverb's Brighton Festival special.
And I'm Rebecca Sandals, and it's our final show of the 2017 Brighton Festival.
Don't cry, Melita.
Hold it together. We've got an hour, 5 to 6, for you to hold it together. We'll be repeating at 10 p.m. and we'll be on air again at 10 a.m. Saturday morning. We've been looking behind the scenes at the festival, meeting some of the performers, creators and the people who make it happen.
And in today's programme, we're going to be hearing how a Victorian cemetery is a setting of a spooky performance.
We'll be talking to the creator of Peace, which explores what home means to us.
We'll be meeting some of the storytelling army out on the streets of Brighton.
And we'll be picking our festival highs and maybe even some of the lows.
That's in the next hour here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, very kindly supported by the Brighton Festival. Starting off now with some killer music from Brighton. This is Bevan featuring Takesha and What Am I To Do? Yeah, terrific music there from Brighton. That's Bevan featuring Takesha. You listen to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM online at radioreverb.com and on DAB. You'll also find us on DAB in Sussex and Surrey via Upload Radio. This is our final Brighton Festival show with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandals. Over the last 3 weeks, my, how time has flown. We've been looking at what's been happening in the Brighton Festival, going behind the scenes, meeting some of the people who make it tick. So in today's programme, there's still lots and lots of stuff happening at the weekend. Lots of free things happening as well, so we're going to be delving into that over the course of the weekend.
And there's lots of things I've been looking forward to for the whole 3 weeks, so you know, it's going to be a great final weekend.
The time has come. Here is one I went to see last night, and I know, Rebecca, you're still to go and see this, and a lot of people in Brighton are going to be very, very keen on this. Australian circus troupe Circa wowed audiences back in 2013 with their performance of Howl Like an Angel, which combined breathtaking acrobatics and physical theatre with choral music. They're back now, this time with a show called Depart, taking place at Woodvale Cemetery, and it's inspired by the legend of Orpheus and Eurydice in the underworld. Here is a little sample of what you can expect to hear. Well, that is just a little example of some of the sounds that you can hear at Depart, which has taken place at Woodvale Cemetery. I went along last night on a stunningly gorgeous evening and I was absolutely knocked out by it. Joining us is Alice Lee Holland. She's the resident director of the show. Alice, thank you very much for joining us on Radio Reverb.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And I have to say, congratulations on a stunning, stunning show. I mean, it was incredible.
Oh, I'm so glad that you enjoyed it. It's a show that's pretty epic and we're really proud of it.
Yes, it would have been awkward if I hadn't liked it, wouldn't it?
When it would.
Just send you straight and say, yeah, thanks, it was great, bye.
I'd be passing my ticket over saying, I've got a spare ticket for tonight, Alice, trying to take it with you. But no, I'm keeping that ticket.
Now, Depart takes the audience through a series of performances throughout the whole cemetery. There's acrobatics, there's dance, there's choral singing. What were the decision-making processes you went through when you first landed at the location?
Oh my gosh, there's about 8,000 decisions that that actually they just hang in the air for a really long time. I spent about a week on the ground here in Brighton a number of months ago, and we've done a number of site visits just to kind of look at the site, and there's a lot that the site tells us. There's a lot that we respond to. Where are the open spaces? Where will the audience fit? Kind of logistics, but then also kind of the beauty of the site and where the most magical kind of spots are and how they will host the very different parts of the show that then we put together to create that overarching experience.
Because the audience move around in different groups, and when I was there, they split off into maybe two or three different groups. And it wasn't like you were deliberately led that way. It kind of happened organically, if you like. You can see things happening all around you, wherever you look. So sometimes there's somebody hanging up in the trees doing some acrobatics. There's figures over there doing some dance. There's somebody sitting in a chair and something's about to happen. I had dreadful, dreadful fear of missing out, I must say. But I guess that you could go two or three times and you'd see it in a totally different way.
Yeah, you could do. I think that's one of the things. It's different every time we do it. So we premiered the work last year in London at Tower Hamlets in Mile End. And that cemetery is quite a bit larger and quite a bit more enclosed. And so actually the audience lost each other. There were three different audiences and they didn't see each other until the end of the show. Whereas in Brighton, it's much more open. And so what it creates is these amazing long vistas, I guess. Mm. And so you see something in the distance, which is really special to this version of Depart.
Well, I'm wondering there on the sort of missing out, because I know when I do promenades and the audience are also obviously worried about, am I missing a key moment? Now, is it somewhere just relax and go with where you are?
Absolutely. Yeah, just relax. I mean, we're guiding the experience, and so you always that we've planned it so that wherever you are in the audience, something will be close to you, and so you will have a different experience to the people on the other side. But it all kind of balances out, and we've made sure that there is minimal missing out going on.
Good.
And you mentioned that closeness. That was one of the things I was going to ask you about, because there are points where the performers, like as the dead walking amongst you, do walk right up with you. And there was a point at which I heard some very heavy breathing and looked around and there was someone just heavy breathing behind me. And there was another point where I was just standing watching something and all of a sudden I felt a hand gripping my shoulder. Now, thankfully, I'm not of a nervous disposition, so it didn't make me jump. Yeah. But I would imagine that something like that happening... It's quite surprising.
We maybe need to check. Was that part of the performance or was that one of the audience that was stalking Melita?
It's a special experience. It is part of the part of the performance. Yeah, and the it's quite a magical part, I think, too. And the performers are really enjoying that opportunity to, you know, it's such a different experience to a proscenium arch production, sure, where you just kind of sit and you're separate. And but in this experience, the performers are right in and right amongst you, and they're just starting to explore what they can do. So maybe lucky you came last night. I don't know what's going to happen tonight.
And it was something that people commented on as well, because I heard people at the end saying, I didn't think we'd be so close to the performers. Now, having seen Circa's work before, I am aware that you are there and, you know, you hear every kind of grunt and like, and the push as they're hoiking people up into these amazing acrobatics. So that is very much, you are so physically close to them. You're just getting that whole feeling of the performance itself, not just seeing it from a stage.
Yeah, I guess that's all about the immersiveness of the performance itself, and then also the nature of circus. Like, it's so real. You can't... my background is actually in dance, and so coming to circus, I thought one of the really interesting things is you can't deny it. It's dangerous. It's happening in front of you. It could go wrong, and sometimes it does. And so there's a real proximity and a real authenticity in circus, and especially in circus work, which I just adore and pretty pleased to be part of.
I wanted to ask about the location, because obviously having a performance and people walking through a cemetery is, I imagine, slightly controversial. I was sort of certainly surprised and thought, wow, that's a bold move, that's interesting. Have you had any adverse responses from people for that?
Yeah, we have. In Hull in particular, we had a little bit of a protest when the show first went online. But it died down very quickly, and that was potentially a poor choice of words. But people realised quite rapidly that what we're doing is something that's that's beautiful and respectful and elegant. And what it does, it actually brings more awareness to a very beautiful space, which is not necessarily used. I mean, it's a place for meditation and reflection and sometimes dog walking. And I mean, they're just gorgeous places. And I think there's something about the presence of death in life that is, for me anyway, pretty, what's the right word? It's real. It's real. Mm. And it's, yeah.
And there was something leading on from that struck me last night as I was walking around about how the cemetery itself, because it's a big old Victorian Gothic cemetery, it's a performance in itself, because it's a performance of wealth, ostentatious wealth. You know, if you were a rich Victorian, you could afford to have weeping angels all over your tomb. And the richer you were, of course, the bigger your tomb would be, and the more weeping women you had all over it. So I thought that idea that the cemetery itself is a kind of star of the piece as well was very important to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that kind of, there's two things that makes me think of. One is what we put in there in terms of performance is sensitive. As you say, it's already loaded when we arrive on site with dancers, for example, or the acrobats. And there's not much they need to do to kind of activate that site. But then when they're, you know, the sky is above them and the trees are around them, and there's a vastness that they don't get to play with in the theatre in the same way.
Now, it's based around Greek mythology and Orpheus in the underworld, and there is an exhortation at the start, don't look back. But I thought you didn't actually have to know anything about Greek mythology at all to enjoy it.
No, I think it's just a kind of a level that's available if you are interested, and if narrative is something that strikes you. There is a sense of the Orpheus and Eurydice story, and so which is the story of he loses her, he begs to go down to the underworld and bring her back, and they say sure, but you can't look back on your way out, and then he does right at the end and loses her forever. So he kind of loses her twice. So there's those universal themes running through the work of loss and love and life and death, and and it's there, I guess, if you want it and you're looking for it, but it's gentle. Yeah.
And we heard a little montage there of the sounds that I recorded last night. I thought the sound design was superb, and the choral singers were stunning. So there is an array of choral singers. I don't know how many there were. They seem to be about 30 or 40, veiled. UKIP wouldn't like that, would they? Carrying lanterns, and then there were times when they doused their lanterns, and you just heard these ghostly, ethereal voices, and then electronic sounds and various other sounds coming through. I thought, you know, the amount of work and consideration that have been put into that sound design was astonishing.
Melita liked this show. Now, yeah. My question has got to be, because it's a sellout across the weekend, Brighton people love circus work. You know, when are you going to come back and give everyone else a chance to see the stuff?
Gosh, I'm not sure. Hopefully soon. I'm not sure about our next event, but we love it here.
Well, you can come round to mine at the weekend and do another performance, because, you know, great.
We like to perform wherever we can. And I think particularly the musical part of it, the project is a collaboration with Spitalfields Music in London and also the National Centre for Circus Arts, and obviously London International Festival of Theatre. And Spitalfields have connected us with the choirs in the areas, and I believe most of our choral members come from Hullabaloo.
Oh, yeah.
Here in Brighton. Mm-hmm. And there's about 100 of them, actually. So they sound absolutely gorgeous. The sound, their music has been composed by Sam Glazer, then the electronic music is by Lapalux. So there's an amazing meld of sound, as you say. And then what struck me in your sound before is just the sound of footsteps.
Yeah.
It is, you know, there's 250 people in the audience, and then there's about 150 performers, but it's so quiet.
You wouldn't know it from that. You really wouldn't know that
no
many people around.
No mobile phones. Turn off your mobile phone.
Oh,
hurrah,
yeah.
But two performances a day as well, which A, must take it out of the performers, and B, I was wondering how different they were when you've got one at kind of twilight, kind of 8:30, and then obviously the late night one, which is the one that I went to.
Really different. They're really different. I mean, the early one is beautiful because the sun is setting, and you really get that kind of glow at the beginning, and then it kind of, you feel that transition into the nighttime. The nighttime one is very dark.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, that's good for Melita. Melita likes very
dark. I like
dark,
yeah.
That's her fang.
Really dark, and the stars are just gorgeous, but it's a very different experience in those two shows. I mean, I think both of them are haunted in a similar way, but I guess, you know, the earlier show, there's more a sense of you can see much further beyond what's happening. So you get, again, that kind of sense of perspective and vista in the distance and... Yeah.
And I have to say, you've been very lucky with our British weather. What happens if it rains?
Well, last week in Hull, we had rain every show.
Uh-huh.
And we had... But again, that's kind of an atmosphere. It really created a very special atmosphere. And the site there is very different. It's much more enclosed. And we were ankle-deep in mud for the week, which was gorgeous.
Marvellous. Well, I'm quite glad that I am going this evening and I won't be ankle deep in mud, although
no.
I can imagine it would make it very interesting. I wanted just to sort of moving away from your show in itself and putting it in the context of the festival. How do you feel about festivals where they have, you know, what's the purpose? What's the benefit to a community of having all these events out and about?
I mean, it's incredible, and I haven't been to Brighton Festival before, but it does feel like I love the flooding of the location with art and performance. I mean, just here, rocking up today, there was a performance just outside, and I love that people at festival time can just encounter something during their day. They don't have to make a special effort to go somewhere; they kind of just happen upon it, and they also can make a special effort to go somewhere. But I think that. That it's a lot about surprise, and that's again what I think is so gorgeous about a lot of the work that we do at Circa. It surprises people. We put it in different locations, we upset what people expect from circus, and so I think that that element of surprise and delight.
I can say you have very successfully achieved that. So Circa with Depart today through to Sunday, performances at 8:30 and 10:15. How are the tickets looking?
I believe that we're sold out, but I wonder if people arrived, they might wait around on and see if there are tickets that haven't
returns.
Been collected.
It's worth it. It's definitely worth it. So thank you very much, Alice Lee Holland, for joining us from Circa. Welcome back to Brighton, and congratulations on finishing the Brighton Festival up in such an absolutely magnificent and splendid way. And we hope to see you back in Brighton again.
Yes, please, come back.
Thank you so much.
Come back. Cheers, cheers. You listen to Radio Reroad, the Brighton Festival special show with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandals, performing tonight if you're listening to the live show. If you're listening to a repeat, you missed it. This is MC Remy appearing with Kate Tempest tonight at Brighton Dome. That is very cool. That's MC Remy, who's going to be performing tonight, if you're listening to the live show at Brighton Dome, at Kate Tempest's final gig of the Brighton Festival.
You're listening to the Brighton Festival special show on Radio Reverb with Melita Dennett and
That's
Rebecca
me.
Sandals.
That's her.
Still to come, we'll be chewing over our highs and touching on lows of Brighton Festival and looking at all the performances and events you could still enjoy before the curtain falls on this, the 51st Festival. Mm. First, though, to a show that opens tonight at the Bevy Community Pub. It explores the notion of what home means to us. And it's a piece that caught my eye, not only because of the subject matter, but also the location of the shows. Earlier today, I met up with the artist behind the piece to find out more.
I'm Jinka Kautenbrauer, and I play a performance called 100 Homes here at Brighton Festival in the Bevy Pub in Bevendien. It's a show about being at home. I visited over 100 people to talk with them about being at home and what home means to them. And based on those talks, I made a performance.
Where did the idea come from? Is it because home is something very special to you?
Yeah, actually, it came from a very personal idea, because I'm originally from Amsterdam. And I was born and raised there, and when I was 19, I moved to Ghent in Belgium to study there, to go to the theatre school. After 5 years of education, I graduated and I decided to stay in Belgium and not go back to Amsterdam, where my roots are. And it kind of surprised myself that I felt more at home at that time in Ghent than in Amsterdam. So it made me think of what it feels like to be at home somewhere for me, who I just have crossed one border, but also other people who have crossed many borders or crossed seas even. So I decided to ask a lot of people.
So you're pulling together the stories of 100 people and picking a sense of home to them.
Yeah.
How surprised were you by the variety? I mean, how do you get across that variety in the show?
I was surprised by the variety, but I was also surprised by the similarity of people. Like, I was surprised by the variety of stories, like people who fled Iraq or fled other countries and who were very open in sharing those stories with me, and it were very special and very touching and horrible stories also. But it, at the same time, their thoughts on being at home somewhere are not that different from people who've been living in the same city for all their lives. It's everybody's looking for the same things, I think, like feeling connected with people around you, having a place you can retreat to, having friends you can visit. It's these small things that are important to everyone.
So how do you channel these stories? Are you using images? Are you using photos? Or?
I did take photos of everyone. So it's actually very simple. I only play for 35 people at a time, so it's very intimate. And I have a box of cards with all the people I visited. And then there's I have pictures. And I show the pictures with a clothespin on my forehead. So I tie a clothespin with a hairband on my forehead. It all sounds very weird, and it is quite weird. But this simpleness that makes it very direct. So the portrait of the people is right above my eyes, so people can look at me and look at the picture at the same time. So they can have an image of that person while I'm quoting them.
And it's interesting that you're performing at a community pub, which, do you know how unusual that is, the venue?
Yeah, it's the only community-owned pub in UK, right?
It's the only community-owned pub that's on a council estate. It's very unique, and so it's got a real sense of home itself.
Yeah, I'm really excited to do this, because sometimes I also play in a cabin, which I bring myself, but because I'm coming from Belgium, it was quite a big hassle to take this whole cabin in a van, and we decided to search for another venue, and this sounds like a wonderful place to play it in, because I've also been talking over Skype with two people who are living in Bevendien, close to the Bevy pub, about their sense of home, so they will also be in the performance. I really like the fact that it sets in such a strong, homely place, and that people are really attached to this pub. It's special, yeah.
So it's a journey for you today as well, in that you've not been to Brighton before, and you've not been to the Bevy and Bevendien, you're finding out a new home there.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Yeah, it's I've just arrived yesterday by train, and we came by the coast with our cab, and now I'm here in the city centre and going up to Bevy.
We're sitting out in the sun. It is always sunny in Brighton.
So I've heard. Yeah. No, it's wonderful. I'm really looking forward to exploring the festival, but also it's nice for me that I'm playing in a suburb, or I don't know how you call Bevendien, but it's in this special environment where it's not that touristic, but really a community. Yeah.
Because that's one of the things that Kate Tempest, the guest director, has said of the festival, that she felt she really wanted to make sure it went out away from the ropes and the red curtains.
Yeah.
And your show's really a part of one of the many performances that are doing that are going out of the norm and into a community that might not get that sort of performance.
Well, I would love that if people would come that normally don't go to the theatre, or who are just sitting in the Bevy pub and think, oh, there's a performance going on, let's go there, and get surprised by my performance. It's not really a performance that's very theatrical. It doesn't have a red curtain, and it doesn't have any lighting design. Oh, I do have a technician with me, but he's there more for support and for baking biscuits with me than doing a lot of technical cues. So that's really, I love the fact that it's so close and that people are really directly confronted with the stories and with me.
It sounds really interesting, and I know you've got to get on with your day and ready to do that. And if people hadn't been tempted by hearing about the show, the mention there of biscuits, I think there are biscuits.
Freshly baked biscuits, yeah, there definitely.
And remind us again, so you're at the Bevy, and it's performances at
2 and 7 on Friday, Saturday and Sunday, and at Saturdays there's an extra show at 4:30 as well.
Keeping you busy then.
Yeah, great. Definitely.
All the best.
Thank you very much.
So as we heard there, Yinka's show 100 Homes runs across the weekend at the Bevy, and tickets are available. And it sounded really interesting.
Sounds good, actually, yeah. And I think this really does tie in with Kate Tempest's intentions at the start of the festival, just to be taking things out to people who don't normally get a chance to sample what's happening in the festival, and taking it out to the community pub, the Bevy as well. I mean, it's an absolute hit as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, yeah, and Zinka said she's really hoping that some people who are just having a drink there think, well, what's happening there? Yeah. Okay, I'll go and have a look. But also, you know, you can make a date to go along and get a ticket as well. But certainly, it's a combination of the two things, actually, isn't it? Because it's not only the out and about at a different location in the community, but it's also a facilitating the storytelling and telling different people's stories. So it's double whammy there.
And I think that whole thing about storytelling as well has come through really strongly. I'm thinking about things like Onlar Fabrica, the installation of Turkish people who are regarded as outsiders within Turkish society, even though they are actually part of society, and telling their very, very powerful stories. And it's all about the things that actually we have in common, bring us together, I think, the theme of this. The Storytelling Army as well, going out and about. And now you've caught some of the Storytelling Army today, and we're going to hear from them later. But just that whole idea of people telling their story and you having an engagement with someone else's story, that even if it's not your story, you can still engage with them on a human level.
Well, and then Yinka picks up on that, because as she was saying, when I sort of thought, wow, all these different people talking about what home means to them, and she was just like, well, actually, it means more or less this, what everyone wants is kind of the same thing at the end of the day, where whatever their experience is, their descriptions of how they feel about home is very similar. So, you know, we have so much commonality, don't we?
Well, it's actually worth looking at some of the things that are happening this weekend that are free. Onlar, still running at Fabrica, that runs through to Sunday, and that is definitely worth a look if you haven't seen that. And as we mentioned, Storytelling Army is going to be out and about all weekend, popping up where you least expect them.
Yep, and you can still download the app The Hum from the festival website. And it's my understanding, when I spoke to Nick Sandiland, who was one of the creators of The Hum, that will keep operating after festival. But do download it now from the website. That's the sort of 15 different sites around the centre of Brighton, where via your phone, you can, when you're at a site, be it at an escalator in a shopping centre or standing at a bus stop, you will then sort of hear a story and watch what's happening in front of you, and somehow the two sort of start to work together, and it's pretty incredible. I really enjoyed that, and I've only done a few of them, so when it's a bit calmer, I am looking forward to doing the rest of the 15 locations.
Well, you reminded me actually that I've only done a couple, so thank you very much for the reminder. I will do that, but good to hear it's running past the festival as well. So that's The Hum. If you go to the Brighton Festival website, brightonfestival.org, you can download that from there. And I have to say, one of my raves of the Brighton Festival is Kathy Pilkington's show, The Life Rooms, which is at the University of Brighton Gallery. It runs through until Saturday,
I think. I checked,
be quick.
And I think they shut Saturday evening. I don't think it's open on Sunday. I hope I've got that right. But either way, go. Yeah, I really enjoyed it as well.
It's a kind of strange dolls and anthropomorphic animals, and if you like things on the dark side, although Kathy Pilkington denied it was dark, but you know, maybe I just see darkness wherever I go.
You love a bit of dark, don't you?
Well, I have to say that this has been one of the themes of the festival. To me, I've seen a lot of things which have dwelt around death. So we've got one side of it with the spoken word and the kind of the community and our commonality, and then another side which has been extremely dark. So that gets the thumbs up from me.
Yeah, well, I'm actually talking. We've been talking about a show that's taking place in a cemetery, and right at the start of festival, I think you saw Endings as well, didn't you?
Yeah.
At the old market, and that blew me away. And that was a sort of very open look at death and people's experience of being people when they are dying and final breaths. And that was a fascinating piece.
Absolutely right. So let's have a little piece of music before we move on with the programme from Brighton. This is Forrester Four and Cast Away. Oh, I suppose that could be a death theme, couldn't it? Oh, blimey. That's Brighton's Forrester Four and Cast Away. You're listening to the Brighton Festival's special show, our final show of the 2017 Brighton Festival. So we're live 5 till 6 on Friday, then repeated 10 o'clock Friday and 10 a.m. on Saturday.
Now, as it's the final show, obviously last night I set you some homework, Melita, because you've been having far too much fun gallivanting around amongst entertainers.
I've done it, miss. The dog didn't eat it, miss.
Right.
I've done it, miss.
There were four questions. Question one was your best experience of the festival. Keep it clean. Question two was your biggest disappointment of the festival.
Uh-uh.
Don't be too cruel.
Nope.
Question three was what surprised you the most. And question, keep it clean. Question four, the one that got away. What didn't you get to see and regret the most?
Where would you like me to start, miss?
Should we start with number one?
Let's start with number one.
Or should we go with the best experiences last? Should we go backwards?
Okay, let's go backwards.
Okay. The one that got away, what didn't you get to see and regret missing?
I would love to have seen Meow Meow. I saw Meow Meow at the Spiegel tent last year, and I've seen her before, and I would absolutely love to have seen Meow Meow, but you cannot be everywhere unless you clone yourself. So I hear by all accounts she was absolutely marvellous, but that was the one that got away.
Okay, the one that got away for me was the Gabriels, because I've heard high things of that. I think it would have been lovely to see some theatre, some traditional staged actors, and I think it looked interesting, and yeah, and I'm well acted, etc. Very well acted, and I'm sorry I haven't got to see it. And you could say you could go tomorrow, but I've physically, I can't.
Can't, no, but there are still, well, you may be lucky and get a chance of a return on that. So that's the Gabriels at the Attenborough Centre up at University of Sussex. And I would always say, you know, if you look at something, you think, I don't want to miss that. Do have a look at the Brighton Festival website, brightonfestival.org, because you may find that there are returns. Sometimes they release some extra tickets as if by magic. But, you know, people book up tickets in February and stuff happens in their lives. So sometimes there are returns for things.
So we regret missing the Gabriels and Meow Meow. Mm-hmm. What a surprise. Surprised you the most? That's question three.
Am I allowed two, miss?
Oh, go on. You can be surprised and shocked.
Thank you. I have to say Collisions at Lighthouse, which was the audiovisual 360 degrees virtual reality experience of being out in the Australian outback and experiencing a nuclear bomb test through the eyes of one of the Indigenous people who witnessed it, didn't know what was happening, saw an Aboriginal god rising up through the ashes, and it takes you right in to that scenario. And I have to say it was one of the most shocking experiences and technically incredible and very, very moving that I think I've ever had in terms of, like, you know, an engagement with technology. Absolutely brilliant Collisions.
Okay.
Am I allowed that?
Yeah, you said you were going to have two.
Oh, OK, yeah. Endings, we were just talking about. I really loved Endings at the start of the festival, which, as you said, the Australian meditation on death and recordings of people talking about their experiences of loved ones dying. And it was very beautifully staged visually, where allegedly the recordings were on tape, which was looped across the stage, and allegedly on records. I have to say, as anybody who's put a needle on a record without putting headphones on, putting it in the right place is quite difficult. So I'm suspending my disbelief with that one, so I don't actually think they were playing it off of records and tapes, but I like the sound, I like the visuals.
So far it's a bit of an Australian love-in as far as you're concerned. You've been raving about Depart, you're now saying your Collisions, which is Australian, and Endings, Australian. There's a theme here, isn't there?
I actually didn't realise that, but maybe there's just been a lot of Aussies in the programme.
Yeah, there are. There's a bit of an Australian theme running through the programme.
And your surprise, my dear?
My surprise was actually last night at the Dome, Brightfields.
Yes.
Because I never know whether I'm going to enjoy a dance production or just sit and go, well, whatever. And actually, I really loved it. But what surprised me was my friend, who I've been friends with for 31 years, did not like it at all.
What?
She just...
What?
I know.
Sometimes there is time for friendship to end.
I know your mouth is wide.
It's gob.
Aghast. Like, I was aghast because I came out thinking, oh, I'm so glad that my friends saw this because I love it. And the others liked it, but she was like, nope. Not for me. So it just shows, I mean, I think that's, to an extent, I think it's great. We can't, if we all loved the same thing, we would all buy One Direction and we would all be queuing at the multiplex for the same film. So.
But, I know you do.
But Brightfields, I loved that show. And not because they were nude for a lot of it. Which actually, dear old Theo, the choreographer who came in and spoke to us.
He is officially my sweetie pie at the Brighton Festival, yeah.
But he kept shtum when you said to him on the videos, what's really interesting is the costumes for this piece, Theo. And he just said, yes, the costumes. Without saying, actually, for about 20% of the show, they don't wear any costumes.
And I think if they put in big black or flashing red capital letters in the programme, contains nudity, there would have been more people there, maybe. I thought it was a disappointing house, considering what a fantastic piece of work it was and a premiere as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the weather played a part and there's so much going on. But I would say that Brightfields, if it's on again somewhere, it's a stunning piece of dance theatre, and the general experience was great. Loved it.
Also, Theo Klinkard is now an associate director of the Brighton Festival and Dome, so we'll be seeing more of him. And if you want to catch up with the podcast with him, if you go to Audio Boom, you'll find our bite-sized festival podcast. And I would say, if you like the work of Hoffa Schechter and you like kind of quite large-scale dance performances, and I thought it was absolutely stunning, then you will definitely like that one. So I'm definitely with you. I agree with you. It was marvellous.
Good. Now let's deal very quickly with the disappointment, biggest disappointment of the festival.
I have to say it was Swan Lake. I didn't know what to expect from this. It was fantastically performed. It was a dance piece with acting in. It started off quite promisingly with a man in his underpants being kind of tethered.
not often you say that, Melita.
Oh, I know. And he was tethered up on a rope making barring noises. I haven't got a clue what it was all about. There were some very sumptuous swan wing outfits, and the central actor who played variously an abusive Catholic priest and a corrupt politician. I mean, it was fantastically staged. It looked great, but I was just left scratching my head. What on earth is all this about? And I kind of came away thinking, well, the message I got from that is that women and swans get a rough deal from men. But I'm not sure if that was meant to the message. And I looked at the programme afterwards, and it was talking about depression. And I thought, well, I don't think I'd have been any the wiser if I'd seen that. But you know what you were just saying about people love things and other people just don't get it. Most of the audience were standing up and hooting and hollering, and I was kind of sat there clapping politely, going, what have I just seen?
Yeah, if artists aim to please every single person, we would get some absolute boring trite the whole time. I mean, you can't do that, can you?
No. But,
so my biggest disappointment, and I think it's fair to say that I'm as disappointed as the people involved in this were, was the fact that Five Short Blasts moved from Shoreham to Brighton Arena. Because I'd been looking forward to going out in a boat in a place which I didn't know at all, part of the town, the area, it's not the same town, but you know, Shoreham, a part of the area that I don't know, and taking a boat out there, and the fact that the audio clearly was directed at an experience in Shoreham. So that to me was just, I did enjoy my experience on Five Short Blasts, but it wasn't what it might have been.
That's a pity of that one. Go on then, what's your best experience of the festival?
My best experience, and I'm going to say this is my best experience so far.
Ooh.
Because
there's more
this weekend, and I am so giddy and excited about Depart, because I saw How Like an Angel back in 2013, and when the tickets went on sale, that was the one that just like leapt out the programme and thwacked me on the head and said, bye, get a ticket. So far... I'm juggling Spectra and being on the beach with the pebbles and everyone smiling.
Okay.
But I'm going to go with For the Birds and Roaming in the Woods, and just, yeah, that was magical.
It was absolutely stunning experience, wasn't it? Yeah. Am I allowed to have that one as well? And can I have Depart as well? Because I've seen it.
We are completely agreeing on something, aren't we?
We are. And can I also have Shirley Collins, please? I know that performance was way back in the mists of time. It was only a couple of weeks ago. It feels like it was a lifetime ago. Absolutely stunning performance by Shirley Collins at Brighton Dome. And you had the feeling, I mean, not only is she a living legend in her 80s, you had the feeling that you were there and present at something very, very magical.
Yep, you can have that as well. And I would say, if anyone's got their thoughts on what they loved or hated, or if they love or hate something Melita and I have said about performances and things at the festival, then, you know, tweet us, let us know your feelings, and let us know what you loved, hated, preferably loved, because there's been so much great stuff.
Yeah, fantastic, yes. And obviously Kate Tempest was the guest artistic director in 2017. Has she succeeded? Well, I met with her before the festival started, and I asked her how much leeway she had with her choice of events.
Oh, it's an interesting process, because I drew up a big wish list and had many, many ideas that in reality were unworkable. But what happens is that you are invited to dream big, kind of thing. And then through a process of having lots of different conversations, you realise that certain themes are emerging and certain things are possible and certain things aren't. And there's a big group, there's like at least 20 people who are all specialists within their particular strand. So, for example, I know very little about contemporary dance, but there is somebody who specialises in that and who has spent all year going to watch different pieces from all over the world and can say, well, this year this is what's incredible in this particular strand and you should check out these guys, and so I do. And it's a very collaborative experience, and guest director, you're not the curator of it, but you are asked to bring a bit of your identity to the table when you know the lineup's being decided. And I feel really proud of the programme that we put together. You know, I've had a lot of input, but at the same time it's been truly collaborative, and lots of things in there that I'd had no idea about beforehand, you know.
One of the accusations levelled at the Brighton Festival is it can be very elitist and very Brighton-central-centric. And That's not the case this year because things are happening outside of Brighton as a result of your input, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, it's interesting because I didn't know that was something that that was being levelled at the festival, but I did feel like when thinking about what I could possibly contribute, this was something that I think is extremely important across the board. Like, just an understanding of how difficult it is for people to travel, to get into town, to spend money on transport, to have access to childcare, like these things that, for some reason, people just do not seem to think that this is an issue for people. Like, and I, in my head and heart, I was, from the beginning, very excited about this idea of including just a bit more than the very, you know, buzzy centre of town in this incredible festival that comes here. And I just wanted it to be a bit more open. So these community centres in Whitehawk and Hangleton are, for me, such an exciting part of this year's programme. What we're going to be doing, I wanted it to run for the entire festival, but because it's a brand new enterprise and that was a little bit impossible, but what we are going to have are two weekends, one at Hangleton, one at Whitehawk. We've been working with steering committees of community groups that are based in these centres, and they've been talking about, you know, what they would like to have in the centres, and it's been a great experience, I think, for everyone involved to just break some of the ice that exists, you know, in essentially assumptions. People assuming that somebody who lives in Hangleton doesn't want to come to the Brighton Festival. It's ridiculous, you know, of course. Like, so I'm really excited about the programme there. It's all free events, which is great, and lots of really exciting things, workshops, participatory things, also performances. And I'm hoping it's the beginning of a much kind of bigger legacy, that, and I think everyone involved in the Brighton Festival has been like really blown away by the experiences they're having in just talking to a bit of a wider section of the community.
There is an issue that when money is tight, funding is being cut. You know, the NHS is in crisis due to funding cuts, yet there's still money for wars down the back of the sofa, mysteriously. What is the place for art? Because art does become marginalised, and art seems as a bit of a kind of like a cherry on the top of the cake that isn't really necessary.
Yeah, it's a really good question. Well, I think it is really necessary. I think it's necessary for our health, you know, for reconnecting us with our own humanity and therefore connecting us more intrinsically with the humanity of other people, which in this time is probably the most important thing that it could be doing, reminding us. Because I think for me, the greatest part of what happens when you go and see music or poetry or dance or whatever it is it's like a reminding. You discover a lot, of course, but also you're reminded of something that you already knew, and it lands you in the company of the others that you shared that experience with, but also out in the world, you know. And so I think that it's extremely important for that reason, but also to have access to creativity, to have access to your own creativity and the creativity of others. It's very important for personal growth, for mental health, for being able to get out some of the things that we carry around that can become too heavy, you know, and can cause problems for us if we don't have an outlet. So some of the problems with it come about when you're with what you expect the art to do or be for it to be understood as successful. This is an issue for us, I think. Like, in other cultures and in other times, the role of art, the role of poetry, was a kind of social role, you know, and it helped us to understand each other, understand ourselves, be together. But now we're asking for it to make us successful or things like this, which is, I think, it kind of inhibits the practice, and also it stops us being able to allow ourselves to enjoy it if we feel we're no good at it. And that's something that I think is important to say, actually, that this idea that you can't play an instrument because you don't know how to, you can't sing because you've got no voice, you can't write because you've never written, this is a strange particular dilemma that's happened to us that didn't used to exist, you know, a couple of generations ago that was not the case here. So I'm adamant that it's extremely important, and actually that we've got a long way to go before we realise actually how important it is in kind of re-establishing some of the connections that have been lost.
Kate Tempest there. Now, we've been mentioning the Storytelling Army a lot on the show, and finally they have taken to the streets. The first pop-up performance was at Brighton Station, and I managed to track them down earlier this afternoon at North Lane. So I've been following where the Storytelling Army are popping up, and hopefully they're about to pop up in Resident Records on Upper Gardiner Street. So I'm going to go inside and see what happens. So there's people just generally obviously shopping for their records, and they've cut the music. I think we're about to get a story.
Everything is narrative. Gather round. We want to tell you a story, or a little bit of it anyway. People, a person you could walk past, a person who could walk past you, never hesitate, has a story. Extraordinary moments amongst the ordinary. Everyday epics. We are the Storytelling Army. We're asking no money. We're not busking. We're not begging. Just telling. Hoping that something might get in, take root, and start spreading a feeling that at any given moment, anywhere in the city, there's a million stories occurring. This is an everyday epic.
It's 1997. Margaret Thatcher's re-elected. Carly and Jason are smoothing it through the charts. And Steph O'Driscoll's born.
Yay!
And I met Frank. Five of us shared a small townhouse in a sleepy English seaside town. Four of us retrobase, one of us is a psychopath. Frank was a psychopath. His claim to fame was splattering Mr. Paul Weller over the car park of a Slough pub in 1972 when Weller was just a little baby mod father. And I ended up sharing a house with him in a small, sleepy English seaside town not very far from here. We're sitting around a kitchen table, an evening like we've just had. Warm, mellow. We've got to get out of this house. It's too freaky, man. Things fly across the room. There's a half-sculpted clay head. There's a dentist surgery in the basement covered in cobwebs. And besides, we owe too much rent. Right, it's done. We're skedaddling vermouths out of here. Hasta la vista, baby. So we grab the bin bags and the holdalls and we disappear into our little rooms with our meagre possessions. But on the way up to my top floor room, I bang on Frank's door because he wasn't around the kitchen table. He'd had 15 pints of Stella that afternoon, which was his usual. Hello? No answer. Out for the count. Okay, right. Got to get on. Up the stairs to the top room. Start packing me stuff. A few minutes later, smash, the frosted glass from the bedroom door goes in. I first felt a fist, and then I felt a kick. He smelt of pubs and wormwood scrubs. That was Frank. That lyric was written about Frank. He pulls his leg out of the frosted glass, cuts a vein, blood squirting everywhere. The door swings open. Knife, hammer, top floor, no escape. I'm going to kill you, you little bleep, bleep, bleep. I've always hated you. Bleep, bleep, bleep. Can't move. Paralyzed. Stuck to the spot. The only thing that is moving was my sphincter. Rapidly. I'm dead. I'm dead. The bloke's got a knife with a 5-inch blade and a hammer. I can't go anywhere. In walks Sandra. Shrill scouse freak. Friggin' hell. What's going on here? My opportunity. It breaks his monstrous, murderous intent. I'm down those stairs, down those stairs, down those stairs, flight after flight. My escape into the sleepy English dusk with Sandra's leopard print coat on me. 24 hours later, I'm standing on the deck of a ferry bound for the safety of Belfast, circa 1987. Troubled Belfast was my sanctuary. I muse as I watch the seagulls off the bow. That leopard print coat suited me.
My name's Pete, and I'm involved with Cascade Creative Recovery, who's part of the Storytelling Army.
And you've just popped up here in a record store. How was it?
Nerve-wracking. I'm kind of the manager of the charity that's part of this, and I'm used to other people doing that stuff. So I don't often put myself in the front line.
You told a pretty powerful story, though, and, you know, what do I know? But I thought you told it well. It engaged me. That's the truth, the whole truth. And
well, stories are stories, you know. It's based on fact. Some names were changed to protect the not-so-innocent. That's how it happened, yeah, with a couple of embellishments. Otherwise, it's just history.
But we all do that, our life, we embellish our life, don't we? I mean, especially if you're sharing it.
Yeah, well, I'm a recovering alcoholic, so I'm kind of used to fantasy and delusion. But yeah, that was kind of, yeah, that was how it happened.
The Storytelling Army will be popping up around Brighton over the weekend. Keep an eye out for them and look for hashtag Storytelling Army to find out the next location they're due to be appearing at. So that's it. That has been the three-week epic that was the Brighton Festival special show with Melita Dennett and myself, Rebecca Sandals, here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, DAB and online.
We've been daily during the Brighton Festival programme. We repeat at 10 o'clock tonight if you listen to the live show, Saturday at 10 a.m. Very kindly supported by the Brighton Festival. Thank you very much to today's guest, Alice Lee Holland from Circa. Don't miss that. All the guests who contributed over the past 3 weeks. And, of course, to you for listening. So from me and Rebecca, Melita Dennett, Rebecca Sandals, it's a fond farewell. Enjoy the rest of your festival.
Bye now.
The Brighton Festival 2017. Every day epic.